Often pain is an indication that something isn't quite right with our bodies, but there are some conditions, like cataracts, for example, that make their presence known in other ways. Usually things like double vision in one eye or a glare from lamps or sun or cloudy vision. These are all kind of symptoms of cataracts. Their impact can be further reaching than just whether you can see or not see clearly. And Dr. Daniel Kanak, an assistant professor of ophthalmology and visual sciences at the UW School of Medicine and Public Health, our guest today to talk with us about that. He practices at the UW hospitals and clinics, joins us today to talk about the causes and treatments for cataracts and some of the research that's going on in that area. Dr. Kanak, welcome to the show. Thanks for coming by.
Thank you very much for having me.
We were talking a little bit before the show about sort of the interesting history of cataracts. Maybe first to explain what is a cataract, but then let's go into the kind of the history of it, because I think it's fascinating.
Sure. So cataract, that word actually comes from the Latin word cataracta, which means waterfall. So prior to about the 1700s, people thought that when they looked at someone who had a cataract, it looked like opaque material kind of flowing through the natural lens. So it looked like a waterfall. If you kind of really think about a cataract, cataracts are normal. I tell my patients that if you have birthdays and you're a human, you're going to get a cataract. It's basically part of the natural aging process of the lens. The reason why it happens is really a molecular change that happens inside the lens. When we're born, the natural lens is nice and clear, which is important because you want the light to focus through the lens onto the retina and then go to the brain. And what happens with time is that the proteins change. Those proteins then precipitate, they cause a pacification, and it's just like if you stood in front of a dirty window, light can't come in, or when it comes in, it just diffracts, doesn't go where it belongs, and then that affects your sight.
And we've been looking at this, obviously it's been well known for many, many years, but in terms of taking care of it, it goes back a long time too, doesn't it?
Yep. So the history of cataract surgery is very interesting. When you kind of look at history, you kind of learn about what's been done, then you kind of think about what is going on now. But the first cataract surgery that we find on record was actually done in the 6th century BC. There was a...
That's amazing.
Yeah, it was pretty long time ago. They had these nice kind of pictures of it, that kind of stuff drawn. But what happened, there was an Indian surgeon, Sushruta, who basically, it's kind of interesting how you would think about it, but one day probably saw someone with a cataract. They kind of described that there was a big, bright room, and he decided it would be a good idea to get a big stick and to kind of push that into the eye and push that opacified lens kind of backwards into the back of the eye. That's called couching. You can imagine that was not quite so pleasant.
Oh.
Yeah. So luckily things have evolved a lot over the years. If you kind of think about the next step is to not just push the whole lens, but maybe try to break it up into smaller pieces. And that was done with a needle back in 29 AD. So things started to progress somewhat. If you kind of think about taking the cataract out, removing the trouble seeing, that's only part of the picture, because you can push the cataract out of the way, you can take the cataract out, but in the end, you don't want to have huge, thick glasses. So if we think about kind of that aspect of it, kind of in the 1700s, things started to change. Their techniques got better. They were able to get out the cataract in one piece, but then really things didn't change until the 1940s, because that's when people started to realize that you could make lenses and put them inside of the eye. In 1949, there was a gentleman named Harold Ridley. He was then knighted, so Sir Harold Ridley. And he was the first one to make an intraocular lens. And how that came about was very interesting. Pilots would come back and have pieces of canopy inside of their eyes. And what they realized was that that was inert. So you could come back, you could have that in there, and then he realized, you know what? Physics is physics. The eye is an optical system. Maybe I can actually put a power on that lens and focus the light where it belongs. So he was ridiculed for a while, but he was certainly right. Putting the lens inside of the eye is the way to go, because that helps kind of decrease the glasses people need, those kind of things. So that was pretty much revolutionary for the lenses. Now, the other aspect is modern cataract surgery. They used to take out the lens in one piece. So that was big incisions all the way across the eye, sandbags keeping the head still. So basically, kind of thinking about what needed to be done is smaller incisions would mean a machine needed to be made to break up the lens into some small pieces. And that was actually developed in the 1960s by a gentleman named Charles Kelman, and he was from the U.S., in the 1984, also in the U.S., if you think about, okay, now we have a smaller incision, we can break up the lens into small pieces, we need a intraocular lens that can be folded. So that was actually developed in 1984 in the U.S. as well.
Mm.
And then finally, kind of to bring everything together, we now can break up the lens into small pieces. We now have a small incision. We have a foldable lens. The final kind of piece of the puzzle would be changing the anesthesia from going to sleep or putting a big shot behind the eye to just putting medicines on top of the eye and inside the eye to take away pain. And that was actually done in 1993 by a doctor in the U.S., Dr. Fishman. So really, it's only the last, you know, 30, 40 years that modern cataract surgery has been done the way that it's done.
And I had cataract surgery myself on July 17th, mm-hmm. Dr. Temprano from University Hospitals.
Very good doctor.
Yeah, very good. Mm-hmm. And boy, my eyesight is much better.
Mm-hmm. Yep, it's such a nice procedure because it's one of those things. I mean, you can't see, you're getting worse, you can't do what you want, you can't drive. And then all of a sudden you come in and then you have a procedure that takes usually somewhere in the realm about 15 to 20 minutes or so. And usually within a couple of days, if not even the next day, you're seeing a lot better.
No, it is absolutely amazing. Dr. Daniel Kanak, our guest today, talking with him about cataracts, causes, impacts, and treatments, and certainly looking forward to your questions and comments. Do you have cataracts? Have you had the surgery, or are you expecting to need it eventually? I can tell you that it's pretty painless if you've been worried about it. I don't think there's much to worry about, but you may have some questions for Dr. Kanak. I hope you'll join us at 1-800-642-1234. Give us a call, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@WPR.org or go to my Facebook page. You can post a question there at The Larry Mueller Show. We'd love to hear from you. Are there genetic conditions that can make us more likely to develop cataracts, or are, mm-hmm. as you were saying earlier, that we're pretty much all going to get them?
Yeah. I mean, if you think about kind of the causes of cataracts, number one certainly is just it is a natural thing that happens to all of us. Not everyone gets visually significant cataracts, but everyone, if you look at them, starting at age 50-ish or so, will have a little bit of cataract. Other things that can cause cataract are certain medications. We see that a lot, like steroids. So inhaled steroids for things like asthma or COPD, so trouble with breathing, or other steroids like prednisone can do that. And also things like diabetes can increase your risk of cataracts. So metabolic disorders, radiation can, trauma can, UV lights, all those kind of things. And like you were indicating, there are certainly metabolic diseases that can cause it, and you can even be born with a cataract.
Oh, wow. So lots of different ways. And symptoms... Typically, I don't know, mine was things started being a little blurry, mm-hmm. a little white.
Yep. So, I mean, I always kind of think about it as kind of like driving your car in the winter. Mm-hmm. Lots of times you can sit down, we're in a hurry, you have a little bit of fog on the kind of windshield, but you can still get to where you want safely and do most of the things you want to. That's kind of the cataracts that are growing kind of in our 50s, 60s, mild, can do everything.
Mm-hmm.
But eventually you get frost on that windshield, can't do what you want, and that's when you need some help, and that's what the surgery can help you with.
Shireen in Springbrook has a question for you. Let's go there. Hi, Shireen.
Good morning.
Morning.
Hello.
I'm allergic to plastics and a lot of materials, and I'm wondering what they put in your eye after surgery if I could tolerate it.
Mm-hmm. So I've had some patients that are allergic to many different things. You can certainly be allergic to anything. It's it's a acrylic that goes inside of the eye, but one great thing you could try is you can actually see an allergist. And what the allergist can do is they could even get one of the acrylic lenses, even the one kind of similar to you would have inside of your eye, and see if you're allergic to do it by doing skin testing and those kind of things.
Oh, good. Thank mm-hmm. you.
Yeah, you thanks bet. For calling. Betty in Madison, hello to you.
Yes. I have heard in the past that there's a nutritional aspect to the development of cataracts. Is that true?
There certainly are studies that kind of hint at that. There's no definitive thing that we could say, oh, if you take this or take that you won't get cataracts. But there are certainly lots of thoughts and studies that show that the oxidation in the lens does come into play. So antioxidants can be helpful, vitamin C, vitamin E, those kind of things. But certainly you would have to take your other health concerns into consideration before taking any supplements.
Mm-hmm. There we go. Thanks for calling, Betty. Sabella in Rice Lake. Hi, thanks for calling.
Thank you for taking my call. I was just recently at the ophthalmologist because my vision was getting blurry, and the optometrist or the optician said I can't correct my lenses. I have to go to the ophthalmologist. I do have the start of cataracts. He said he did not like to perform surgery on people who have had radiokeratotomy surgery, which I had 20 years ago. So now 20 years later, I have the beginning of cataracts, and I'm worried that they won't be able to perform the surgery because of the scars from the RK surgery 20 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Do I need a second opinion?
Mm-hmm. So thinking about radiokeratotomy, so just to kind of think about why that's done, our dependence upon glasses is based upon how long our eye is and those kind of things. If you imagine if you have a long eye, the light is focused in front of where it belongs. If we made that eye a little bit shorter, those light rays go where they belong. So incisions are made into the front of the eye.
Yes.
Now, to answer your question, it depends upon how many incisions were made. If there was not that many incisions were made, you could still actually get a regular incision put in between those incisions. And certainly having radiokeratotomy does not preclude you from cataract surgery in most instances.
Well, one eye I had quite a few stitches, and the other eye I did not have quite a few stitches in. So
yeah,
I could do it in one eye and make both eyes work together.
Sure. The other kind of thing to think about, so certainly a second opinion, there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, I have patients that I send for second opinions just to be sure. I mean, just part of being proactive with your health and those kind of things. The other thing to understand about radiokeratotomy is that we need certain measurements to decide which lens to put inside of your eye. And then sometimes with radiokeratometry, those measurements are harder to do. But any experienced cataract surgeon, I mean, I've done lots of patients who've had radiokeratotomy. If you got a second opinion, that kind of stuff, your surgeon can certainly talk to you about all these aspects.
So do I have to have fear of the incisions breaking open at some point?
That can happen. Those incisions, even though they've been done many, many years ago, can still open. But that's why it's important to take a look with the slit lamp, which is kind of our microscope that we look at in the office, see where those incisions are to see if we could either sneak an incision in between, or sometimes we'll move the incision back a little bit. So there are things that can be done.
Well, that's good news. Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. And Kay in Madison. Hi, thank you for calling.
Hi. I'm wondering if you can do both eyes at the same time if they're both needed. And also, I've heard that you have to wait until the cataract is ripe.
Mm-hmm.
Quotes. Can you tell me about that?
Sure. So first off, to answer your question about both eyes at the same time, depends what you mean. If both eyes are medically appropriate, so it's time to do cataract surgery, basically we would want that separated usually by at least 2 weeks. The reason why is because even though cataract surgery has changed a lot over the years, there's still a small risk that something could happen. Maybe something happens during the surgery. Maybe there's something that happens with infection. So you really don't want to do both eyes on the same day just in case. The other question that you asked in regards to, repeat the other part of your question again.
Oh, whether they have to be ripe.
Ripe, yes. So when you think about ripe, what we basically mean is that you don't want every person to go and get cataract surgery because you want it to be worth that small but measurable risk that something can happen. What we mean by ripe is we mean that it's medically appropriate. We mean that your insurance companies and us kind of as a medical group agreed that it's time to do it, and that usually is in the realm of about 20/40 or 20/50 on the vision, or if you have blinding glare at nighttime.
There you go.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Dr. Daniel Kanak, our guest today, an assistant professor of ophthalmology and visual sciences at the UW School of Medicine and Public Health. He practices at UW hospitals and clinics, and we're talking with him today about cataracts, causes, impact, and treatments. I'm Larry Mueller. Judith Sears-Poisson, our producer on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking cataracts today with Dr. Daniel Kanak. Larry Mueller here. Thank you so much for listening in today. You can join us at 1-800-642-1234. Go to my Facebook page. You can post there, too, at the Larry Mueller Show. Love to hear from you. Joe in Monona, we'll turn to you now. Thank you for calling.
Thank you for having this program.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to ask Dr. Kanak. I had surgery a year ago,
mm-hmm.
and things are still very bright to me and yet cloudy.
Hmm.
And I find it quite bothersome. Even when I go to church, sometimes I'll wear my sunglasses in church.
Hmm.
And I've just put a new floor down in my kitchen, and it looked very bright to me.
Hmm. Okay. Well, when you think about cataracts are only one part of our vision. When you had your surgery, did you feel like it was a lot better and then it got worse? Or did you feel even after the surgery you were always having these problems?
No, at the beginning I thought it was a lot better.
Okay.
And now not so hot.
And how long has it been not so hot?
A year. Well, it was done a year ago, so probably, I don't know how many months.
Okay.
I felt.
Because it can be a couple things. Now, nothing beats a good exam kind of in the office just to make sure what's going on. But a couple things affect our vision kind of on a daily basis. One easy thing is dry eye. Dry eye can really affect your sight.
Which I have.
Yep. So make sure that your dry eye is fully treated in artificial tears about 2 to 4 times a day, as well as a warm compress for 5 minutes once a day. The other thing to think about is that sometimes there's actually a secondary cataract that grows.
Mm.
If you imagine, I always like to use the M&M analogy. If you imagine your natural lens like an M&M, when we make the incision for cataract surgery, we make that into the candy coating of the M&M. We then break up the chocolate, take that out, and the artificial lens goes inside of there. In about 30%, the back part of that candy coating, which is clear after surgery, can then get scarred. And if that's the case, you can feel almost like the cataract is coming back with glare, trouble seeing, those kind of things. And if that's the case, then that could be opened up with a laser. So I would talk to your surgeon, get a good exam, and kind of figure out what's going on.
Okay. Thank you.
Yep. Thank you very much for calling. And Myrna in Stevens Point. Hi. Thank you for calling.
Hello.
Hello.
My question for the doctor is, what are the risk factors in having cataract surgery?
That's an excellent question. So anytime we think about any surgery, there's always a risk involved. So when you think about cataract surgery from where it has been to where it is, I mean, the risk when you think about cataract surgery, I always quote patients, the national average is about 5% that something can happen. There is a small risk of loss of sight. There's even a small risk of loss of all sight. There's a small risk of infection. The front of the eye can have troubles or even the back. But the good news is that in experienced surgeons' hands, usually that risk is somewhere in the around about 1% to 2%. But it's important to have that discussion with your surgeon so you can kind of put into context both how bad your cataract is as well as how much risk in your particular case there is.
Mm-hmm. I was noting a note from Mark in Sheboygan who said his wife had cataract surgery in her mid-50s. Unfortunate result, she had 2 retinal detachments.
Mm-hmm.
And she's fine now, but it was an unpleasant complication is how he put it.
Yep. So anytime you do any surgery, that's why it's important to have that good discussion. I always have these discussions with my patients because in the end, I want you to be well-educated. My goal as a physician is always, my job is to educate you on what's going on so that you can make a good decision for yourself.
Mm-hmm.
In view of retinal detachment, if you have had a retinal detachment within a year mm-hmm. following a cataract surgery of many years ago, do you have a greater risk of detaching once again if you have the other eye done?
It is true that when you have a retinal tear or a detachment, it does increase your risk of having another tear. I think in the end, what really matters is how bad the cataract is. If it's affecting your life, if you're having lots of trouble, you can't drive, you can't read like you want, you're having lots of glare, then it might be worth that risk. But that's why certainly it's important to listen to your symptoms and to talk to your surgeon.
Thank you very much.
You bet.
Thanks a lot for calling. Facebook question from Jeffrey. Can a person redo a cataract surgery? I had a lens placed in to correct astigmatism when I had the surgery, but my eyesight's bad now. Probably just needed a non-corrective lens. Can it be redone?
Mm-hmm. So that gets us kind of, there's different types of lenses to put inside of the eye. If they had surgery done and a lens was put inside the eye at the time of cataract surgery to fix astigmatism, astigmatism basically means that when light comes in certain people, it bends a little bit. So things don't look straight, like a door frame might look crooked. Sometimes usually within a week, what we can do is we can rotate that lens, but if it's been longer than that, sometimes it's something else. Like sometimes it's scarring, like the other patient was asking about, and those kind of things. But really, a good exam will kind of help decide what that next step is.
And a Facebook question from Lynn. I had cataract surgery a year ago with Restore Acrosoft lenses inserted. The only thing I see clearly is close reading. Otherwise, I have halos and ghost images.
Yep.
What do you think of having them removed?
And how long ago was that surgery, does it say?
A year ago.
So the Restore lenses, they're very good lenses. But the trouble with the Restore lenses, and just to kind of, for the rest of the audience, there's different types of lenses that we can choose to put in at time of cataract surgery. The most classic type is one that sets us up in one length. What I mean by that is basically you can choose, do you want to see up close or do you want to see in the distance? The holy grail, if you would, for ophthalmology would be a lens that you can see in all distances, like when we were 20. Sometimes those lenses have side effects. So the lens no longer changes shape like it used to when we were 20. So one aspect that they could go after is maybe we can put in different rings of focus. So you have a ring for up close, you have a ring for intermediate, and a ring for distance. The trouble is that with these rings, glare, halos, those kind of things are much more common.
Hmm. So that's the situation there with it.
Yeah. So in the end, I mean, to take the lens out can be a little bit problematic up to a year. Lenses can be removed, those kind of things, but I'd say if it was a year, it's probably safest just to leave it be. If she's having lots of troubles, then I would definitely talk to the surgeon that put the lenses in.
And just one more story here from Jeanette in Milwaukee. She had cataract surgery, and she was told to wear a mesh cover over the eye, taped down at night to sleep on her back. Because of a neck problem, she found it uncomfortable to sleep on her back, and after removing the taped eye cover several times, the skin on her face peeled, and she had got an infection. And she's wondering if those kinds of problems have changed or are better now.
Mm-hmm. So I think what she's talking about is basically a shield to protect the eye. So we still do use shields, tape to the eye, those kind of things. But actually what you could do instead of using tape is lots of my patients will get what we call a pirate patch, which is like an elastic band with a patch over it. They can then put the shield underneath and use that to hold it on, and that would take care of the tape not irritating the skin and leading to infection.
Yeah, I had taped it and had no problem with it.
Yep, sometimes paper tape is more useful, that kind of stuff.
Barb in Milwaukee, thanks for waiting. Hi.
Hi. I understand that sun exposure has a lot to do with cataract development. If wide-brim hats or sunglasses are worn in your younger years, does this prolong your good vision? I understand it's really common around the equator that cataracts are very prevalent. Could you address sun exposure?
Yeah, I mean, if you think about cataracts kind of worldwide, cataracts are responsible for about 50% of the world's blindness. I mean, as you're alluding to, it's certainly a very common disease. So UV light has been shown to lead to cataract formation, those kind of things. I think, though, cataracts are so environmental plus just kind of natural. So while it can help decrease the rate of progression, those kind of things, there's probably nothing that would keep it from completely showing up. But nothing wrong with wearing sunglasses. It's very helpful for many eye diseases. I don't think necessarily you have to go around with a big hat covering up all sunlight, but using sunglasses with UVA and UVB protection I think is helpful.
Mm-hmm. And I'm just thinking back, as she mentioned, that tropical countries, there have been some doctors at UW and elsewhere, too, who have donated their time.
Mm-hmm.
And Dr. Gil De Venecia is one, I believe.
I went to the Philippines with him when I was a resident. It was an outstanding experience, a wonderful guy. Nothing makes you open up your eyes and realize how much help is needed in the world, except for when you go on a medical mission.
Yeah, and has done probably thousands of cataract surgeries
for
nothing.
Yeah. Yep, an amazing guy. There was a free rural eye clinic in the Philippines that he was involved in. But, yeah, there's lots and lots of patients that really their eyesight is because of him.
Yeah. Susie in Springfield, Illinois, thank you for calling. Hi.
Good morning.
Morning.
Hello.
Hi. My mother just had cataract surgery. She's 68. And she had something odd. It wasn't normal cataracts, apparently. She was farsighted to begin with and went to the ophthalmologist, and they were very concerned about the type of cataract she had, got her in for surgery within a week, and then waited 2 weeks for the other one. And now she has some, I don't know, edema, some lumps in her macula and has to see a retinologist. I'm totally ignorant about this. If you could maybe help me. I hate to ask you how you like the tie I'm wearing or, you know, without seeing it, but maybe you could give me some insight with that much information.
Sure. So thinking about cataracts, most cataracts are elective. You can approach them, kind of fit them into your schedule kind of a thing. Sometimes cataracts are more of a problem we have to fix. It's hard to know exactly what she had, but once in a while, especially if the patient is older, the natural lens grows so quickly that it starts to push the iris, the color part of the eye, forward. Mm-hmm. And if that's the case, if we don't intervene in the short term, the eye pressure can get very high, the eye can get inflamed, all those kind of things. So to answer your second part, the cysts that you're actually talking about behind the eye, in that kind of between 1% to 5% chance of something happening at the time of cataract surgery, there is a risk of what we call cystoid macular edema. And what happens in that disease is that because there's inflammation with any surgery, sometimes there's little cysts that happen in the retina. And when those cysts happen, that has to be treated because that actually affects the sight and people don't see nearly as good as they can. So those cysts should be treated by a retina person like you're doing.
There you go. Sounds like somebody's at the door. Thank you very much for calling, Susie. And Bill, your turn. Hi, Bill.
Hello?
Yes, go ahead.
Hello.
Oh, okay. First I have a question, then I have an observation. The question is, I may have missed it, but did I hear you say that when you get cataract surgery and you get new lens, that they can become separated later?
You mean the lens can come out later?
Mm-hmm. The surgery gets undone, I guess, or something.
No, I mean, the surgery doesn't. What the question was pertaining to previously was that if a patient had a problem with the lens, should that lens be removed? Intraocular lenses can be removed. They don't necessarily, most of the time, an intraocular lens, once it's in, it's in. There are certain diseases like trauma or certain diseases in patients where the lens can move, but that's very atypical. Typically, once the lens is inside of a patient, it does not have to come out, it doesn't have to be changed or anything like that.
Oh, good. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Now, here's my observation.
Sure.
Over the last decade or so, people or companies have sold products claiming that they can clear up cataracts with eye drops, mostly L-cosine and things like that, and they've failed. Mm-hmm. But I'm associated with a company called Aquamed that produces an eye drop that does clear up cataracts in 80% of the patients who try it. Mm-hmm. And we're not getting any traction through ophthalmologists, and I'm assuming it's because it cuts into their surgery and costs them money because they don't have the surgery to perform. Mm-hmm.
Have you studied this or looked at Aquam? What is it, Aquamed?
Aquamed. I have not seen any studies on Aquamed. What we like in medicine and science is what we really like is a prospective randomized controlled trial, or at least some data that says that if this person takes the medicines, this was their vision before and this was their vision afterwards. The trouble sometimes in medicine and in products that are shown is that you have anecdotal evidence. So my neighbor took this and they were better. So in the end, if there's a product that works, I mean, that's certainly something that we would recommend. But without data, it's hard to recommend a product.
So you wouldn't, if it worked, you'd be recommending it.
Yeah. I mean, if it works, there's no, my whole thing about what I do is not necessarily to do surgery as much as to do what's right for the patient. So if they had something that took away cataracts, it's not a surgical thing then, that's fine. Because in the end, it would be safer and those kind of things.
Mm-hmm.
But real data is what we care about.
All right. There you go. Thanks, Bill, for calling. Ken and Elroy, it's your turn. Hi, Ken.
Yes. Does the doctor have information about cataract surgery on a person with Parkinson's disease?
Mm-hmm. So Parkinson's disease, there are certain things about the vision and the eye that happen in Parkinson's disease. The two classic things are Parkinson's disease unfortunately affects how you move, and then how your eyes move, and then how you blink is actually part of that. So in Parkinson's disease, classically people don't blink as much, so they get lots of trouble with dry eye. So even before considering cataract surgery, you would want to treat the dry eye, and that would be the artificial tears about at least 4 times a day and a warm compress 5 minutes once a day. The other thing that happens in Parkinson's disease is trouble reading. And if it's just trouble reading, it might not even be the cataract. It might actually be an inability of the eyes to look at what you're reading. So certainly a good examination with an ophthalmologist is warranted. And if it is cataracts, in the end, we would treat it the same. So cataract surgery could be helpful then. But those two things need to be looked at first.
Thank you so much.
Mm-hmm. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. And let's go to Bill in Orfordville. Hi, Bill. Thanks for calling.
Good morning. Yes, I've been diagnosed that I can have the should have the surgery at some point in the near future, and I'm concerned about the surgery itself, the process, the holding your head still, and all this, and you know, I'm the kind of guy that has to be put out to do an MRI, and I've had tongue surgery, and you know, things like this. So I'm very reactive and spontaneous.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
How do we hold my head in place while you do this?
So certain patients, I would say in my practice, maybe 95, 97% are basically done under topical, so you're awake and alert. But once in a while, people can't. They're spontaneous, like you're saying. They're claustrophobic. They're anxious. And in the end, you can actually go to sleep. So even though in the olden days we used to do it in more general anesthesia, lots of times if people can't tolerate the local anesthesia of today, you can certainly go to sleep, and it's still a very short procedure, those kind of things.
Mm-hmm. There you go.
Thank you.
Yeah, right. Thanks, Bill. And let's see, we have email from Walt. What glasses are needed after the surgery? How about between the two procedures?
Mm-hmm. So if you're thinking about glasses after cataract surgery, the classic way that we do it is we try to take away as much as your prescription as you have. So most of the time, people, if they don't have any astigmatism, see good in the distance, and then they just wear reading glasses, sometimes just over-the-counter reading glasses. If you have any residual prescription or if you have astigmatism, you might need glasses for both distance and up close. And there are some lenses that try to get people out of glasses. Those were the Restore lenses that we were kind of talking about before, or even lenses to help the astigmatism. But that's something that can be decided and thought about and discussed prior to the cataract surgery is done.
Hmm. Donna in Eau Claire has a good friend who's having cataract surgery in October. She has untreated lazy eye as a child, or had it, and is consequently almost blind in her right eye. The cataract surgery will be on her left eye, her good eye. When my aunt was in the situation, they kept her overnight after the surgery. Like my aunt, my friend lives alone. The doctor plans to send her home after the surgery. Should I advocate for an overnight stay?
So in the end, number one, the first decision is make sure that she's having lots of trouble. Since this is her better seeing, her only good seeing eye, make sure that it's time. In regards to kind of having someone stay overnight, I would say that's a necessity. There's lots of rules about getting the anesthesia, those kind of things. Keeping people over the night, unfortunately, is not something that we routinely do anymore because of costs and those kind of things.
Facebook question from Claudia. How are cataracts in children treated now? We are especially interested in congenital cataract treatment.
Mm-hmm. So congenital cataracts, that's done typically by a pediatric ophthalmologist. I'm a comprehensive ophthalmologist, and pediatric ophthalmologists are taught how to take care of diseases like cataracts that happen in children. The procedure is a little bit different because a child's lens is a little bit more elastic, and some of the procedures like opening the front part of that candy coating can be a little bit different. So there's lots of similarities, but some differences, and that's why typically a pediatric ophthalmologist would do that.
And there is a new study, we kind of alluded to it earlier, that shows that people who've had cataract surgery have a lower rate of hip fractures, and maybe address the connection there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I mean, if you think about the aging population, a couple things that kind of come to mind are, of course, cataracts, but also hip fractures. I remember my grandma had a hip fracture recently, and it's a pretty life-changing event when you fracture a hip. And if you think about what people who are aging want, is I think a big part of what they want is they want to be mobile, they want to be independent, those kind of things. So what this study tried to figure out is they tried to figure out whether or not cataract surgery and having it would decrease your risk of having a hip fracture. It was an outstanding study, and what it did is it looked at 1 million Medicare beneficiaries who are 65 years or older, who had cataracts diagnosed between 2002 and 2009. About 40% of them had cataract surgery during that period, and then 1.3% had hip fractures. So then the thought of the investigators, their thought was, well, was there any correlation? If you had cataract surgery, did it decrease your odds or your chance of having a hip fracture? And what they found was that cataract surgery, so patients who had cataract surgery, had 16% decrease in odds of hip fractures than those without surgery. What was really interesting is that they found that that decreased odds of having the hip fracture, the effect of that was even more pronounced in people who are more aged, the 80 to 84-year-olds.
Oh.
And then also they found that people who had chronic diseases. So in those groups, about 28% less chance of getting a hip fracture. And, of course, the more severe the cataract, the more decrease in the reduction in odds. And that was at actually 23% if you had a very severe cataract.
So really important to have that surgery.
In the end, I mean, if you think about it, having a cataract, especially if it's just in one eye, can change a lot. If you have a cataract in just one eye, you can get lots of trouble with depth perception. You might be walking around, kind of walking straight ahead and be fine, navigating most things. But when you go to a stair, when you go to a step and you have to use that depth perception, then you can run into trouble, fall, break your hip. And that could certainly be very debilitating. And remember that hip fractures have a 30% mortality rate.
Oh. Joe in Washburn, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi. I have a friend who left the state of Wisconsin, actually, to have cataract surgery because he was falling between the cracks of, you know, being that 55 and older guy that didn't qualify for any social program to help him with some of the cost. And I think there's a lot of people out there now, you know, that are in that situation with extremely high deductibles. Can you give us some ideas, you know, for the audience that's out there on some kind of a range that's considered to be acceptable for cataract surgeries?
That's an outstanding question with many, many different answers. So when you think about surgeries and billing and those kind of things, remember that there's lots of things that come into play. The price that's quoted is a price that's basically quoted to everyone, but then there's insurances, the negotiated price and all that stuff. So that's not necessarily the price that the hospital receives, that the physician receives, those kind of things. Cataract surgery is expensive because it is real surgery. The machines that we use to do the surgeries are, you know, $100,000, $150,000. There's anesthesia time, all those kind of things. So all that comes into play. But typically, cataract surgery probably is in the realm of about $8,000 to $10,000 an eye.
And
yeah, I thought you were going to say something similar to that. And you know, I think that we can all say that for some people, that's really out of the ballpark to have this malady taken care of.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep. And then do remember that even though that's the price of cataract surgery, there's cost containment and those kind of things in regards to negotiated price with insurance companies, Medicare, all those kind of things. So unfortunately, falling through the cracks, it's very unfortunate.
It really is. But on the good side, or to the positive side, we are now in a situation that when we do have these surgeries, they're successful, what, 99% of the time?
Yeah, I mean, about 98, 99% of the time, people have the surgery. 15 minutes later, it's done. Patients are very happy nowadays. There's no stitch, typically. There's typically no shot behind the eye anymore. Certainly, we will use those modalities if we need it, but most of the time, it's very, very successful.
Well, Dr. Kanak, I want to thank you so much. We're out of time. I appreciate your coming by. I hope you'll come back and be with us again.
You bet. It was lots of fun.
Love to have you back. Dr. Daniel Kanak, an assistant professor of ophthalmology and visual science at the UW School of Medicine and Public Health. He practices at UW hospitals and clinics. And, of course, talking about cataracts with him, I'm going to look at another health issue coming up next, and that's the issue of strokes. Dr. Matt Jensen joins us to talk about what we can do to prevent strokes, the symptoms we should look out for, and whether there are effective treatments for those who have had one. Important information. Stay with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.